This is David Sosowski, Southern Oral History Program, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. It's February 17th, 1999. This is another in the Listening for a Change project here at the Oral History Program. I'm in Durham, North Carolina, and this morning I'm interviewing Mr. John McDonald.
So usually I just start kind of making sure I have the basics down, like when and where you were born.
I was born in Durham, North Carolina, October the 19th, 1920. Watts Hospital.
1920. So you're
78 years, 78, coming up to 79.
Okay. Let me see if this one there.
I just want to test this. I have a dial over here, and one is registering, and one isn't. So I want to make sure that it's working.
Okay. Mr. McDonald, when did you how did you come into the pharmacy business, into the drugstore?
Well, I was brought up in the drugstore. My father opened in 1914 on Main Street.
So this same store, you could really date all the way back to?
It dates about 1914. It moved to 9th Street in 1916 in a wooden building, two-story wooden building. It moved in this location in 1922.
Wow. What was his name?
Angus Henry McDonald.
And your mother's name?
Beatrice Wood McDonald.
Did she also, did she help him in the business, or did she?
Well, basically, she had three sons to raise, so but you know, she would come in from time to time, but she wasn't a regular employee. He had other employees here.
And what are your earliest memories of his store? What did it look like then?
Well, very much like it looks today, with the exception that the booths were over against this south wall here, and as we began to grow a little bit and expand, we took them out because we added some new departments such as ostomy products and that type thing.
Uh-huh. But it wasn't in this space, though, was it?
Pardon?
What? It wasn't in when you were little. It wasn't here, was it?
It's right here.
The same place.
Same place.
Okay.
Yeah. So he moved in it in 1922. I was born in 1920.
And it was already here.
Yeah, it was in this location in 1920, the best that we can date it.
Did you spend much time in the store as a child?
I went to school at E.K. Poe, which is about two blocks down the street here. And, when I was big enough, instead of walking home, which was in front of Old Watts Hospital, I'd walk up here to the drugstore. And I'd kind of sit over in the booth there and get my homework, and then later send me on home a little later on. But the drugstore stayed open those days till 10 o'clock at night.
Wow.
Opened about, in the early days, particularly during the Depression days, store would open at maybe 7 in the morning, 7 to 8, and close at 10 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
They were long hours.
Wow. And do you remember, what did the place, what kind of memories do you have of the store when you were young?
Well, this West Durham was basically involved with the mill, Irwin Mill, which made sheets and pillowcases. And most of the community was involved, you know, in some way with the people that worked in the mill.
Uh-huh.
And there were houses right across the street where that parking lot is now. And there were, it was pretty much isolated to a degree from downtown Durham. I mean, it was a little community within itself. And the small stores up and down 9th Street, you know, provided whatever the needs, mostly for the people that worked in the Irwin Mill. You had a couple little barber shops, a couple little shoe shops, you had a couple little grocery stores, and whatever, you know, basically beamed towards the needs of the people that worked in the mill.
And when you were young, did you get any sense of how your father dealt with the public?
Well, yes. Well, you know, around 1931, 32, during the Great Depression, I very well remember that things were, I was big enough then to know that things were not going well in the, financially for anyone. And quite often, people would come into the store, and families were a little larger back in those days than they are now, and people on a short time, and not enough income, and they have sick children. I can remember when they come down to the drugstore and say, "Doc, I've got some sick children. I just don't have the money right now. Can you fill these prescriptions and let me pay you later when I can?" And he did that. And he did it as long as he was able to. And they were kind of hard times. I remember that. I wasn't charged with making a living, but I do remember the days when things were pretty rough financially in this area.
It must have been hard for him, because he didn't have anything.
It was very difficult because he was having to pay his supplies, and I remember there's an old safe under that counter right there, and one of the break-ins a few years ago, I had this memorabilia. We had some checks on the Bank of West Durham, which went under during the Depression, which was two doors down from us. Checks were returned for as little as $1.25 and $1.50 for insufficient funds. And they emptied it. They took everything out of the safe, including, and I lost my check, which I just kept, you know, as mementos of some harder days.
And how was the, I guess I should ask first, what was it in about the drugstore business that made you decide to follow in your father's footsteps? Did you think about it? Did you think about other options, or?
Well, not really. I mean, when I got out of high school in 1938, things were still not really normal.
Uh-huh.
So I decided to go to work in the mill up on the hill there, and I got me a job in the Irwin Mill and was living at home, and I saved my money, and I made the sum total of $11.88 a week, $12 a week less Social Security.
And did you feel plush?
I didn't really feel like, but strangely enough, adults, even in the weave room, weavers and loom fixers were making anywhere from $14 to $15 a week, and they were not high paid either.
Right.
Of course, a lot of families had other members of the family working, that kind of helped along with the financial. And most of the big majority of the people lived in mill houses, which were all around this area.
How long did you work in the mill?
Well, I think from about 15 months, and then I went on to the University of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The tuition was very reasonable back in those days. Mm-hmm.
And that's where you studied pharmacy?
I started pharmacy school.
Yeah. Well, in those days, how would the, kind of both in your father's day and when you had just gotten in the business, how would the pharmacy business have been different than today? I know that's a big question, but...
Well, one of the things that I recall, back in those days, doctors made house calls. In other words, they would go to see the patients at Watts Hospital, which is about four blocks up from here. And maybe at night, then when they finished the rounds around the hospital, then they'd come out in the community. And if someone had a sick child, they'd probably call his office, and he'd go by. And quite often, the people, knowing the doctor was in the neighborhood, they would send a friend over and say, "Listen, we've got a sick child over here." So actually, they make house calls around the neighborhood and call the prescriptions in. and we would deliver them on a bicycle. And really,
that has changed.
That has changed. They not only do the doctors not make house calls, but I don't know of very few, some few places deliver on contract basis, but I don't know of many in Durham that do anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a change for you.
Mm-hmm. What else would come to mind? What about just the relationship to the community you're around? I mean,
the relationships were close, you know. In other words, you got to know the families and their children. And one of the benefits of that, back in those days, the children would, as they grew up, a lot of them getting married, they just moved 3 or 4 blocks away. They stay still within the area. And if you had given good service to the parents, then you automatically inherited another family. So you built your business on your past experiences. It was very pleasant. I mean, you know, this is a mobile society now, but back in those days, the kids stayed pretty much in the neighborhood. A lot of them did, if I recall.
So you could just follow it through the generations, children from grandparents and parents?
A lot of them would follow the family into the mill, and some, mm-hmm. you know, in some of the jobs that they were interested in or equipped to handle. Mm-hmm.
Did it work the way it does now? Did it take a doctor to have a prescription? Did people have to?
Yes.
That was always the way it worked.
Yes, in my lifetime.
A doctor would call in.
They would either write the prescription and leave them with the family to have them, someone to bring them down, or they would sometimes call them in. Probably more were written and left than were called in, because a lot of people didn't. I'm sure they didn't have telephones back, as many as you have now.
Right. Was there anything different about how you dispensed medicines?
Oh, well, we did more compounded in those days than we do now.
What's that mean exactly?
I mean mixing the various medications. Uh-huh. You know, for instance, now a lot of people couldn't take a pill, so we'd have to put the whatever available into a liquid form, you know, that type mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of. There was more compounding of various products, mixing them from the base ingredients.
Were all the drugs coming from? I mean, now everything comes from, you know, Glaxo or from, you know.
Well, back in those days, you had a wholesale house, and Peabody was one of the first ones that we were dealt with. They were located right off Chapel Hill Street at the underpass, right before you get to town. Peabody uh-huh. Drug Company. They would have a salesman come around once or twice a week and take the orders. They would deliver them, I mean, whatever that they stocked that you needed. And they would have the pharmaceuticals and the other items, you know, the normal in a drugstore at that time. So they could take care of most of your needs.
Do you remember the kinds of, I guess I should ask, I was going to ask the kinds of problems that people came to you with. What sense did you get of the health of the mill people who were coming in and what they looked to you for?
Well, now, as I recall, the mill usually had a nurse or someone uh-huh. employed by the mill. Or some person in them, you know, to kind of screen
right.
minor things that they could handle within. And then I'm sure they had a doctor contracted to look at more serious things that would happen in the mill.
Right.
Basically, we were involved with medication of just as general illnesses that, you know, children had to.
Uh-huh. And did people come in? There were over-the-counter medicines then.
Yes, but not as many as we have today.
Uh-huh. Sure not.
In other words, the manufacturers today would have a product, would have a liquid, a tablet, a capsule, and chewables and so forth that, that increases their inventory to the drugstore now. We didn't have that problem back in the early days.
Right. Well, do you think there's been a change in what your customers, over the years, what your customers come to you looking for?
Well, they would come to the old drugstore like it to look for first aid problems, and the bandages, tapes, and iodine, and mercurial chrome, and it's simple things that you keep in a first aid kit. They would come for that, and they'd come for the medicine, and also come for the soda fountain.
Did you always have a soda fountain?
I always had a soda fountain. And we still got one.
I know. Me and the kids are there every week.
Actually, a lot of people used to meet at the fountain in the mornings. They come down and, meet and have a Coca-Cola or something like that and pass the time of day. In fact, I recall one fellow told me that back in those days, people didn't retire as early as they do now, at least I don't think they did. This one fellow I knew, he retired, he had a little business, and he used to go up to the corner of the drugstore, not this one, but one other end of town, and meet his friends. And he was the first decided that he was going to retire. He went up there, the four of them were sitting down having a Coca-Cola. First thing you know, he said, I was sitting there by myself. He said, everybody else had something to do. He said, I'm going to buy my business back and go to work. He kind of felt left out. I didn't know whether that was appropriate or not, but it was an interesting story to me. The retirement looked good, and then all of a sudden he realized that other people were still active, and he was kind of inactive.
Well, I was going to ask you just that question. I'm sure you could have retired many years ago if you wanted.
Well, we enjoy the people. We enjoy the young people, the community, and the older people. I mean, I've done it all my life, basically been involved with people in the area, and we enjoy coming over. Frances loves children, she loves the older folks, and if you notice all the pictures of the young people that they bring their school pictures in and give them to her, and they just enjoy being on the street. I mean, I've just been active most of my life, and I've seen so many people that retired, and they had about 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 weeks into retirement, they've gotten the few things they wanted done, finished up. Then all of a sudden, they've got this time on their hand, and a lot of them will volunteer, which is great, to the Red Cross or the hospital. But they don't realize they've been active all their life, and all of a sudden there's a void and they need to fill it. But I'm sure some people thoroughly enjoy retirement, but I mean, I'm not one of them. As long as I'm feeling good and able to do, I just enjoy what I do, and I enjoy the street and the people.
Do you think it was easier or harder to be a pharmacist and a drugstore owner when you started, or easier in some ways and harder in others?
I think the trend this day is the pharmacists now are going to be better educated. The pharmacists are going to change from what we knew years ago into more of a total health care thing. For instance, all the graduates now are going to come out with PharmDs instead of BS degrees. they're going to be better prepared. They rotate them through the hospitals that they didn't do when I was in school. They get to see the various diseases, the illnesses. They get to study them firsthand. In fact, I foresee it. It's farm to the, going to be not only they're going to have an area set aside from the actual prescription department for consultations and in privacy if somebody, and people that got serious illness like diabetes, you know, to help them get regulated, to advise them, even to have the products on hand, the newer products. It's going to be a different concept. It's going to be more professional than just merchandising and filling. As they say, that pharmacies got to move into total health care, and I think that they're training the new pharmacists to do that.
But at the same time, the feel of those larger pharmacies, is much less personal than what you have here.
Well, I think that I think you possibly see in the future that some of the pharmacists may take one or the one of the illnesses, the major illnesses like diabetes or something like that, and specialize in it and have all the equipment you need.
Right.
Have all, you know, they have the latest information available. And a real public service, you know, they I can envision, you know, checking on people to see that they're doing the, taking the blood samples properly and
right.
Using the insulin, probably if they're getting any trouble, they come to the, for a consultation in the store. And I think it's going to be beamed towards total health care rather than mass merchandising, which, you know, there, some stores have both
right.
today.
Right. In some ways, that seems like it might be having the pharmacist do some of the things that people used to expect a physician to do, but that you don't really get the time from a physician to. I mean, just to sit down and talk with your doctor these days is kind of hard.
Well, I think within limitations that they, the new pharmacists are going to be able to offer advice and kind of screen, be able to screen certain things that they don't do now.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have been rotated through a hospital and actually see some of the patients and the illnesses and how they were treated,
right.
rather than just read about it in a, you know, in the
right.
books or reports.
Well, not having that, did you pick up some of it on your own, as far as what illnesses?
Well, yes and no. There's nothing like hands-on.
Of course.
There's no substitute for that.
Right.
You've gained some experience, you know, years ago, you know, I don't like the word, you know, scratch that. It's a bad habit. But many times people would come in the drugstore for a little minor thing to bandage up a little cut finger or this and that and the other. And we did a lot of that years ago for the community.
And you'd actually do that?
We don't do that anymore, do we? Everything had to be done, you know, under controlled conditions. But for years, you know, people would, if we had a butcher shop down the street and the guy had a little nick or cut, he'd come up to the store and say, "Hey, Doc, bandage this for me or sell me something for it or let me have something to for the rapid and so forth," and we did a lot of that in those days.
And little ailments, I mean, stomach aches or things like that, when people come?
Well, if you had, yeah, they come for a little minor thing that we could, you know, we could recommend some over-the-counter products that were effective. We did a lot of the counter-prescribing, I suppose, is the word they call
it. Right. Well, it's a lot easier to walk in here than to get the doctor, right, for many of them, I imagine.
Well, I think most of the pharmacists know when to refer. I mean, they don't mind handling minor things, but they don't want to get into the field of, get out of their own field, you know. A trained man knows his own limitations, hopefully.
A trained man with some humility has...
knows his own limitations, and he stays out of things that certainly is not... He stays within his realm of expertise, I think.
Were there more, what would we call them? Did customers tend to use more home cures when you started in the business? Things like turpentine or that kind of stuff?
Well, yes, it was right much of that. The home remedy type thing, that those were passed along from the grandmother to the mother to the daughter and that type thing.
And you carry those?
We still got a few of the old products.
Like what?
Well, I had a product this morning. A lady came in looking for an old product called Father John's.
What's that?
It's called Father John's. I'll show it to you. But her mother had used it on her when she was a child. And it's been kind of effective. And she said she had to drive many miles down to find an old store that had it, and finally someone said, well, there's an old store in Durham. And someone recommended out. She came in this morning and she got a bottle of Father John's.
And if you don't mind my asking, which one do you use
well,
Father John for?
I think that Tennessee, they seem to think it might help ward off colds, or certainly the psychology as well as the effectiveness, you know, is involved a little bit there, I think. But if it works, you know, don't knock it.
Yeah. Well, what other kinds of things would be like that would have...
Well, a lot of the older products that are used for arthritic type things that, you know, that can apply locally that have been effective over the years, we still stock.
Like, such as?
Well, I'll have to go.
Well,
two or three old liniments over there for external application. They seem to provide a little relief when applied as directed. And we also got some over-the-counter products to take internally that within reduced dosage from the prescription type medicine still provides, you know, some relief from some of the pain. Arthritis and old age seem to go together. If you live long enough, you're liable to develop some form of it somewhere.
Even though you graduated from the University of North Carolina, might not have been trained that those kinds of remedies work. If people believe in them and want them, that's fine.
Well, yeah, they stood the test of time. I mean,
good point.
Yeah, otherwise, I mean, they still wouldn't be they wouldn't be asking for. I think they're beneficial, you know, within limitations. As I say, most of them have been used in families, you know, for one or two generations, you know, kind of hand-me-down type thing, particularly in the rural areas.
Well, what about is it you or your wife that I remember when my wife was pregnant and the baby hadn't come on time. I think someone told her that she could come here and get a...
You're talking about a pregnancy cocktail.
Yes. I forget what it was. It was...
Well, it's cast all, but we only do that. We work with women's clinic, and it's an old procedure that they've refined. They've studied it, but we don't do that unless we're by direction. I mean,
I don't think my wife actually got it here, but I think she heard that y'all sometimes did it.
And they,
we do with the
nurse midwife. If they follow the patient on through the pregnancy, and then sometimes they're overdue, or sometimes the water breaks early, or so forth. Castor, within limitations, will sometimes induce labor, which but therefore, these mothers are followed. I mean, we just don't do it unless we are directed by the nurse midwives. And quite often, I'd say maybe 60-70% of the time it is helpful. Otherwise, they can induce labor later on when they need to. But only by direction. You don't walk in and just say, "Let me have some cast."
I think my wife heard that y'all did it like that, and decided to make one herself. She's a physician. My wife is, and she tried it, and she was in labor within about 6 hours later.
It's an old procedure, but the mothers tell me it's preferable to the drip, which they can use to induce.
Right.
You know, if the castor oil works, it seems to be much better than they all, you know, than having to induce labor, particularly if the birth is, you know, imminent.
And I think with my first child, my wife wanted to have a, what's it called when you have you don't use drugs or pain?
Well, natural childbirth.
The first time. Second time. She learned.
Yeah, I'd be a little hesitant, I think, if I were faced with that.
But the first time, that's what she wanted to do, so she went, she tried to get it.
Well, you know, they usually prepare those mothers by, don't they have go meet in a over a period of time in the natural.
They do, but I'm not sure it really got her ready for what was coming. There wasn't any way to practice that, I don't think. But she did fine, but.
Right. Yeah, what you're saying, you don't practice something, it's got to be perfect the first time.
Right.
You know, that reminds me of a funny story. Don't include this in. But,
can I take that?
Yeah, okay. No, just.
Okay. Where were we? Do you think that the experience of working with the public like you have and seeing people's needs has given you certain insights into people, and I don't mean to make it a big philosophical question, but into humanity or into people that most of us might not have?
Well, you see people in all stages of life. You see the happy side of life, the new babies and the new births.
That must be really nice.
And then you see the sad part where people sick with fatal terminal diseases that you see life from one end to the other. You see the happy side and you see the sad side. And all in between, really. But I suppose that when as the years progress, you're going to. I remember one doctor told a friend of mine one time, he said, "Doc, I think I've got a little arthritis." He said, "If you're over 50, I know you have. Get on the table and let's see how much."
Right.
So, you know, as you get older, some of these diseases are going to hit most people. And you see that side of life. And So you see the full spectrum from beginning to the end.
I always wondered, what do you do when someone hands you a prescription? More than likely, you know what's wrong with them. Even if, isn't that true?
I mean, sometimes you get an indication of how serious the illness is.
Right. I mean, and if it's somebody you know, or somebody that has just been coming in, you know, over the years, do you say anything, or do you just?
I don't. I mean, if they want to talk, it's fine. But I don't ever. I mean, I wouldn't comment, because you never know who's listening.
Right.
No, that if they want to say my wife's not well, or she's this and that and the other, fine. You listen, but you don't. Listening is an art, I think, and most of us need to develop it, more of it.
Right.
I think listening, you know, would help the person rather than comment. And if you do so, I'm certainly sorry to hear that. If I can help you, let me know, something of that nature. But listening, I think, is important.
Mm-hmm. So if someone came in with a prescription for a
morphine or something of that nature, a strong painkiller, you wouldn't say a thing.
You'd just be open to listening.
To listening and whatever. You know, if they brought the situation up, then certainly I'd express, you know, my feeling for you, and can we be of any further help to you, or something of that nature. But just let the person open up to you, not you wouldn't come in. At least I would.
And would you ever about now, but certainly in earlier days, you know, it was a fairly small world around West Carolina, the way you described it. It was a neighborhood where most people knew most people.
But prescriptions, I mean, you don't comment on anybody's illness. No, you don't discuss it with anybody outside the family. At least I certainly wouldn't. I don't think any competent pharmacist would.
You don't say, I knew that you'd never gossip or anything like that, but I was just wondering, like, if someone comes in for a prescription for morphine, you would never say to and then you see a friend of theirs who's supposed to...
Well, cut it off, and I'll give you a little thing I'm telling you about.
Yeah.
You just don't... You don't call attention to it at all. You just do your job.
And you wouldn't ever, you wouldn't say, well, Joe, I think maybe you should be asking Bob how he, you know, why don't you look in on Bob, see how he's doing? Because Bob brought you a prescription for painkillers.
I never comment.
Just got, yeah.
Just be sure they understand the directions and the prescription is within the, you know, within reasonable limits.
Right. Do you feel like you get this I'm not sure how to ask this, Mr. McDonald, but particularly when it was a smaller place and you really walking around the neighborhood, you probably knew a lot of the people that you do you feel like you get this you have this behind the scenes look into people's lives?
Well, yeah.
That's for you, that you don't share, but
that
it's there for you.
Years ago, when I was growing up, early on, 50 years ago, when I first got my license, about 50, you knew most of the people in the community and their families. And maybe You would, now I probably don't know 10% of the people I went on, because this area is more mobile now. People visit our street that didn't years ago. When I was growing up, this was kind of, West Durham was kind of isolated, and you only went to town on the weekends, on payday Fridays and Saturdays. The people in West Durham would go down and purchase the clothes from Belt Legged or wherever they happened to trade. But other than generally, most of the people stay within the area during the week. And most of the recreation was provided by the Irwin Auditorium, which was torn down for the Durham Expressway. But they had an indoor swimming pool, they had a bowling alley, they had a soda shop, they had a library, they had a tennis court. And this whole field up here, where Wells Springs is now, was a baseball field. The whole block up here that is now Wells Springs and all the other businesses was a baseball field. So the mill, and they also had a movie. They had movies three nights a week, Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday nights in the auditorium. So most of the entertainment of this area was provided by the Irwin Mills.
And all that was done by Irwin
Mills? By Irwin Mills for the enjoyment of relaxation of its employees. And there was no need to go downtown except, you know, about once a week, maybe twice a week sometimes. But basically everybody stayed pretty much in the early days with, you know, in West Durham, and most people knew each other.
And did it seem, was it strange to know so much about people's lives through?
Well, you, times have changed, you know, and people have changed, and we did our job back there. We didn't delve into people's personal lives at all. And we were part, most of the small merchants were part of the community. They would support their local schools in any way that they could, you know, and that, you know, again, I've got a bad habit. I dislike that.
I don't, it doesn't bother me at all.
Well, it was a pretty close-knit community. I don't know how to describe it other than say that you knew most of the people in the area. Certainly you knew the ones that were your customers, and knew the ones that were customers of other stores. And you saw the children, you watched the children grow up, they were hard days in a sense, you know, particularly during the 30s, and even up in the 38 to 39 to 40, to World War II, things really didn't begin to improve. But it was enjoyable working in the area with the people. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't still be at it.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you, even after you went away with the Navy, how long did were you in the Navy?
Almost 4 years.
And you saw some of the world?
And well, no, basically I was a flight instructor at Pensacola Naval Air Station and some of the other air stations around the country. I was an instrument instructor. And from time to time, you know, they needed instrument pilots, I think, and they needed those of us involved in that, you know, were pretty much kept back training.
And even after doing that, were you always sure you were going to come home?
Pardon?
Even after doing all that, you weren't tempted to go somewhere else, or you always knew you were going to come back to West Germany?
Well, I had to finish pharmacy school. So I got married the last day I was, when I was released in active duty, and then I was married that night, and then we set sail for Chapel Hill to complete my school.
So you met your wife while you were in the service?
During the war, yes.
In Atlanta, or?
In Atlanta.
That's where she was from.
Right.
Has your wife always been as involved in the business as now, or did that?
Well, when our children were small, she stayed home until they got in school. Then she came over and went over. My father was still living, so she'd come over and help us when the children were in school. And then later on, my father and mother both died within a period of 2 years.
When was that?
73 and 75. So she came over then. The children were well into school, so she came over to help me out. She's been here ever since.
That must be nice.
Very nice.
Especially with the kind of hours that you work.
Pardon?
Especially with that kind of hours you work.
Well, we shorten our hours a little bit. And we may shorten some more as time goes on. But I've seen more people rust out than I have wear out. I mean, it's just our nature, you know, to be out and we enjoy it and come to the store and enjoy the people, enjoy the street.
Do you know when the mill opened here?
I can only give you approximate dates. I think around 1910 for 1990.